All right, ready, set, begin.
David, football David. The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Hope you had a happy July 4th. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program, available as always on iTunes, Stitcher, and NFL.com/Sheck. All right, here we are once again in Studio 4, our temporary home, until Studio 66 is ready to be unveiled and rebranded Studio 66 Maximum Strength. In the meantime, joined here in Studio 4 for some kibitzing about the upcoming Top 100 list, the final 10 names unveiled on Wednesday night. It is, I always get confused, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and that would make it 8 p.m. Midwest. Central is what they call that one, and that means Mountain is what? 8 p.m. All right, so we've covered that, and so let's talk about those final 10 names, where they're going to come in, and more importantly, which names were left off this list entirely or undervalued, with a guy who wrote a fine piece that's up on NFL.com. He's one of our pals from the Around the League podcast, which you also should subscribe and listen to regularly. They're keeping you up to speed on all things as kickoff comes closer and closer with each passing second. Just like we are here on the Dave Dameshek Football Program, I'm talking about Chris Wessling. What's the poop, fella?
Not much. Just getting ready for this Germany-Brazil game.
Yes, we're coming at you on Tuesday, 12:30-ish, a big soccer game coming up. Black tie, furiously trying to get this one in before the game kicks off or whatever. Is that what it's called, a kickoff, black tie?
Yeah, it's called a kickoff. That's
correct. Okay, before the game kicks off, a battle for the minds of soccer fans. It's Brazil, South America versus Europa. Different styles of play. That leads, you know, last year we talked about that. Oh, also, let's say hello to the other guy here in Studio 4, all the way from England. He's a tremendous Miami Dolphins fan. And
Not a soccer fan, though.
And he did not. And he's really a man without a country in a way, because he also refuses to acknowledge Independence Day here in the U.S. of A. That's because he was born and raised in the U.K. I'm speaking, of course, of Handsome Hank.
He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank.
Hello, Handsome. How are you?
Very well indeed. Thank you, Dave. How are you?
Fine. How did you spend your 4th of July?
In mourning, as always.
We got you.
Yeah, you guys got us again.
We got you again.
Actually, you know what? In truth, I attended a parade, a 4th of July parade, and I waved a miniature American flag.
How about that?
So, you know.
Your transformation is complete. Except that you already really don't seem to care much about anything that goes on in the UK. Well, you didn't shed a tear when England lost in the World Cup.
But I will be avidly at about 4 a.m. tomorrow. England play India in the first cricket test of,
That's the thing with their series.
And I'll be there.
You don't care much about a lot of the food in England. You don't sing songs about that much.
Who does?
Well, I mean,
I don't know that they have their own national dish. Like, Indian food I love, which is kind
fish
of
fish and chips is what's
yeah,
English.
But, I mean, like, come on, it's fish. It's
you can't fish. Get worked up
it's
about
not...
a shepherd's pie.
I like a shepherd's pie. Have you ever had a nice shepherd's pie, Wessling?
I've had shepherd's pie. I wouldn't call it nice.
I'll make you a shepherd's pie one day.
Okay.
Is that a promise?
Yeah,
because I love that.
Maybe that could be my pie this year, actually, for Thanksgiving.
Ooh, yeah, the great pie off. We'll do it again in Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving time. The reigning champion, another around the leaguer, Dan Hanzus. He put his ladies, not just one, but both his ladies in the kitchen. His wife and her mom in the kitchen. They emerged with a delicious bourbon pecan pie that claimed the 2013 Checky Award for best pie.
Well, let's not forget, it was never really mentioned at the time because, look, we all have to be happy for him, but they didn't claim it. He claimed the championship.
That's right.
But it was interesting he played no part in making it, but he claimed the championship.
Well, they hand the Lombardi trophy to the owner of the team, don't they? Which
Good
isn't
point.
To imply that Dan owns either of those women.
No.
Let's talk about the top 100 here. And, but the question I was going to ask, I'm sorry, is this seems like a pretty juicy Final Four for mm-hmm. soccer fans. It seems like before the thing, I knew that these were four great teams and different styles and great storylines and some of, at least, or most of the best players, Neymar excepted with the injury. But what do you think right now, as we sit here in July, fellas, what would be the juiciest Final Four matchup about 6 months or so from now? What would be the greatest title Sunday for us? We did this last year, if you'll recall, and I think it sort of stays the same. The easy one to throw out that I will take away from you is a lot of people would be fine with a repeat of what we saw. Seahawks 49ers on one side, Broncos and Patriots on the other.
Right.
Let's shake it up a little bit, though. How say you, Handsome or West? Go ahead.
I think, here's how I would shake up the NFC, at least, because I think I would, you know, we're going to see Seahawks 49ers twice in the season, which is, it's rich enough for all of our appetites. Do we need a third bite at that? How about the Seahawks and their defense that won them a Super Bowl last year against the highly respected and praised Chip Kelly Eagles offense?
Ooh.
If that works out the way that people think it might do this time around, you know, with some additions.
Anything that steers us towards a regional Super Bowl would be cool. I always like that. You know, if you ever could get Giants and Jets, that would be swell stuff. Obviously, a year ago would have been even better in the Meadowlands. But, you know, obviously, Eagles-Steelers would be cool, Cowboys-Texans, and so on. Wes, how say you?
I've got a callback to my last appearance on this very podcast when we discussed the possibility of the New Orleans Saints having the best record in the NFL this
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have home field advantage, it will be tough to beat them. And I like the Packers to bounce back in a big way. So I think Packers-Saints
would
be a great NFC.
That is marvelous.
Ooh.
You've got to take the Saints out of their dome.
All right.
Put them in Green
Bay.
Look,
I'm on board with that. I'd much rather see a game in Green Bay.
Right.
Well, we can pick up where I agree with that completely. I mean, if you watched the Niners at the Packers last January, it's just great seeing the plumes of smoke coming from their heads and all that jazz. It's just great stuff when it's snowy and all that sort of thing.
Cue Twitter to tell you that that's not smoke coming off there.
Whatever. Steam. What is it, Handsome?
Steam. It may be smoke, but if it is, then that's probably not what they should be doing.
They'll probably be suspended.
Yes, that's right. And we don't need to talk about that anymore, do we?
No.
No, indeed. Not smoking.
Not this week.
Not taking any of that stuff. Bears-Packers would be great. Seahawks, it starts the season, and of course that's a callback to Fail Mary 1. What if you got Packers? What if the Packers hosted the reigning champions, the Seattle Seahawks,
in
Lambeau?
That would be a fun game.
That would be great, because we'll resolve once and for all this Fail Mary business in week one. We could either go back up there and see that one again. What if the Packers beat them? How about this? Seahawks lose at home, which would buck the trend. Only the Giants 2 years ago, they're the only home team to ever lose the season kickoff game out of 8 or 9 go-rounds. The only time that's ever happened was the Cowboys 2 years ago beat them. So the Seahawks should likely win that game, not to mention the fact that they almost always win when they're at home. But what if the Packers went in there and beat them? Now that would be, and then the Seahawks go on a great run, and they don't lose again all through the regular season. It'd be great if the Packers then went back up there to see who's the best in the NFC.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good one.
That would be great.
All right. Let's not talk about that any further right now. I want to get together a proper list, which I will, Handsome, and then you can put it on your fancy NFL.com site there. Meantime, Chris Wessling has already gone and done that, and he has listed his 10 greatest, how did you call it again?
Snubs.
Oversight snubs.
Snubs. That's straight out snubs.
To me, the one guy who's on the list who is way, way, way too low is Matt Forte at number 91. How Matt Forte, and in fact, it was interesting, way back, however many weeks ago it was, in the first episode of the Top 100 Reaction Show, which I'm on right after. In fact, if you're listening on Tuesday, we're doing a preview show of that this evening, and then on Wednesday night, you can see us talk about the final 10 names up there. I can't imagine it's going to be anybody other than Peyton Manning, given the season he just came off of. But Matt Forte was steamed that he was so low on that. He was not kidding around. Did not like. He thought it was disrespectful that he was all the way back there at 91. How say you on that one, Wes?
I was shocked that he was below Charles Clay.
How about to me, the thing I do is I throw out what their overall number is and look at it where they rank among their peer group. And for him to be behind Eddie Lacy, I thought that was a real slap in the face.
I would take Eddie Lacy over Matt Forte.
You would, huh?
Yes.
Because?
because I think he's more talented, and I think he's more of a tone setter, and I think you need that physicality in the playoffs, and I like especially Eddie Lacy beats people up.
Especially in Green Bay as well.
Yeah.
He feels like a Packers-type player, whereas Forte is kind of – the Bears need a Eddie Lacy equivalent, and they don't really have that. Forte's more finesse than he is kind of just raw.
Isn't that an interesting thing? You know, we all try to divine what the – is there a common ingredient if we look back over the last, you know, three or four world champions? What do they all have? And I try to figure that out. And the thing I have been pointing to over the last year or so is depth. If you have overall team depth, that puts you in great position there. The Seahawks had it, the Ravens had it, and so on. The Niners have had it and not coincidentally have been in three straight title games and all of that. But the banger back is an interesting theory because Ray Rice kind of was sort of that for his team.
And Bernard Pierce definitely
is
that kind of back.
And Marshawn Lynch, of course, and Frank Gore is a banger type. I covet in my brain in Mark Trestman's offense, Matt Forte should, at least from a fantasy perspective, and in fact we'll talk fantasy in just a few minutes here with Michael Fabiano, the hardest working man in fantasy. He'll jump in here with
Hall
us.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that's right. I think Forte's in store for a great season, but maybe you're right. Maybe it is about the 3 yards and cloud of dust type of guy.
Yeah, that's just a preference on my end. I'm not saying Lacy's a better player. I would rather have Lacy than Forte.
You know, the other thing is, too, there's an instant debate also at NFL.com right now because the three running backs to be unveiled in this top 10 on the top 100 go Adrian Peterson, Shady McCoy, Jamal Charles. I'm not sure of the order, but I think I would rather have on my team either Jamal Charles or Shady McCoy over Adrian Peterson because they catch the football. Isn't that a valuable asset in 2014 more so than it was a decade ago? Believe me, you know, I love teams that pound the football, but it seems like it's more important to have a guy who can do both things these days.
I would take Peterson, and I don't think it's close. I think there's a huge gap between him and the second best running back in the league.
I take issue actually more with just the fact that there are three running backs in the top 10
players that funny?
In the NFL. That just doesn't seem in this day and age. It doesn't seem like I think Peterson is the best of those three. He's the guy you'd most want on your team right now. I agree with you on the fact that the other two probably.
Yeah, forget 5 years. Talk about just the guy you want for this upcoming season. I think Peterson.
I think he's the guy. I like the fact the other two can catch, but I don't think that they can do
Peterson
some of the other
can catch
things
just
he can
fine.
Do.
Yeah,
they don't use him that way, and he hasn't really had the people to throw him the ball either. But there's no way there should be three running backs in the top 10 in the NFL over J.J. Watt, over Aaron Rodgers. That's insane.
I hear you. When doing the math on what was left, we realized last week, there are going to be three runners in this top 10 here. That seems funny given all the talk about the quarterback league and all that jazz. But their numbers are beyond argument. I mean, individually, what are you going to do? You can't leave Jamal Charles after not just one, but I mean, the two straight seasons he's put together. You take away that knee injury. By the way, I don't know if this is getting over my skis, and if he gets hurt, in week one this year and never is the same again, then this goes out the window. But assuming decent health the rest of his career, Jamal Charles is definitely going to the Hall of Fame, right?
Well, he's a running back in his mid to late 20s. I don't think we can assume anything. Running backs get hurt at the drop of a hat.
But at this pace, it's beyond debate. I mean, he's on a historic pace that he's putting together.
I don't think so. I think it's way too early to say just because of there are a lot of running backs. Look at the 80s. Guys like Billy Sims, William Andrews. Who was the other guy?
We talk about both those guys quite
Kurt
a bit
Warner.
Here. And Kurt Warner.
All these guys were dynamite earlier in their careers, and they just played 7 or 8 good years instead of 10 or 12.
I think he compares to Sean Alexander as a more recent comparison, as like a guy who could do it all, but then, you know, was his star burnt bright for a relatively short amount of time.
He is getting he's getting a heavy workload, that's for sure, with KC.
I'll tell you one thing about him. I'm not ready to crown him for the Hall of Fame, but right now I'll crown him the NFL's most underrated player.
I agree. At the very least, he's the most underrated running back. I know underrated. Look up the word underrated. You know, just because he's a Pro Bowler doesn't mean that people still don't sleep on him a little bit. I mean, obviously I say that about a lot of guys in the NFL. Guys in the Hall of Fame are underrated still. People still don't recognize how important they were. I think Jamal Charles, that's exactly right. He's the most underrated guy in the NFL. He's People, Adrian Peterson has that 2,000-yard season, and hail him for his great comeback. Jamaal Charles did the same thing. He had, what, 1,600, 1,700 right. yards that year? It just happened to fall in the same year where Peterson did his even more dynamic stuff.
I just want to put in a plug for Jordy Nelson as the most underrated player in the NFL, but Jamaal Charles would be right there with
him. Well, we're getting to the quarterback and wide receiver combos in 1 second here. We're gonna jump to that. But we agree that Peyton Manning will be one here, and there's zero debate about that.
There's no debate, though.
You know, Shady McCoy, let me just say this about him, though. I was talking to one Willie McGinnis. I bring that up because I'm a name dropper, and also because he said something interesting. I said, won't they miss DeSean Jackson, the Eagles, this year? Because everything went through Shady a year ago, but it still required that DeSean Jackson was there to take advantage when the defenses moved in, that then you could go up top to DeSean Jackson. He said that will still be the case, and it really isn't all that important if you consider Darren Sproles and Shady McCoy lining up behind in the shotgun behind Nick Foles. And there's just simply, it's simple math that it will be impossible for defenses to handle this.
Do you really think they're going to play on the field that often together?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I hadn't really considered it, but
that's usually an off-season topic that never comes to fruition during the season.
Well, I obviously don't know, but the way McGinnis drew it up for me, he just did the you know, X's on the top, O's on the bottom, and said this. How is an NFL linebacker supposed to contend with this? You flank out your Cooper and Jeremy Maclin, and you streak them deep. You have the two tight ends that you can run up the center of the field. There's simply no way that NFL linebackers are going to be able to cover Darren Sproles and Shady McCoy out of the backfield in space. You're going to have one-on-one coverage on both of those guys, and if you get either one of them the ball with any sort of room, the linebacker is going to be no match for them.
Sounds like my Seahawks-Eagles NFC Championship game's going to happen.
It was fascinating. And the Eagles, by the way, their defense should at least be better. So that's interesting. All right, now, Wes, let's get to your thing here, because we got a lot of noise from the Czech Republic even, and I didn't care for the attacks I received verbally. Let me say this, because last week, here's a handsome said off the cuff, hey, did you hear Andy Dalton? Or that Hugh Jackson says Andy Dalton and A.J. Green are the best QB wide receiver combo in the NFL. Handsome laughed at that and said, we could come up with 10 names. I doubted that we could do it, but then I was proven wrong. We did it. We named even 11 of them.
Well, one of them you didn't allow.
I didn't. I said put it on the back burner. I didn't ultimately say no, but anyway, fine. I ceded to your wishes, to Black Tie's wishes, and everyone else's.
You were outvoted in your own studio. It was an embarrassment.
It wasn't my greatest moment, but I'm a man of the people, and I allowed it ultimately, didn't I? So I said Matt Ryan. You said Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. I said, is that really that much better than Andy Dalton and A.J. Green? I'm not so sure about that.
While you were throwing out RG3 and Pierre Garçon as an option, as a viable option.
I mean, listen, this story about RG3 is the most... We're going to talk about Matt Ryan. But this thing about RG3, everybody has such an axe to grind with this guy. And maybe he was behind the scenes manipulating things with Shanahan, and there was a power play going on there. But it's as though... It seems to me people have completely forgotten what he did 2 years ago. The historically great season he had in his rookie season. It's as though it didn't happen. Everybody's like, oh, this is a big year for RG3. He better show up this year or he's in a lot of trouble. Well, listen, he was hurt last year, right? I mean, I don't get what that – all right, let's talk about Matt Ryan, though. I keep hearing and reading stuff about RG3 that positions him as though he's Mark Sanchez. I mean, he was terrific. The last time we saw him playing at full strength – well, actually, we haven't seen him playing before in full strength since the regular season of his rookie year. But, you know, he almost beat the Seahawks.
He's going to be comeback player of the year this year.
You think so?
Yeah, and I feel very confident about that.
Can they win the division?
They can, yes. I'm not saying they will, but yeah,
I say the Eagles
possible.
Are the most. If I have to say, you have to bet your life on one team winning one division, I would take the Eagles to win the NFC East.
I would not.
Yeah. Who would you take?
The Broncos to win the AFC West.
That's the if you want my life, that's the one I'm going to put my life on. That
really?
Division.
I would
feel
very good about that.
There's more of a crunch.
Who's
going to
beat the Broncos in that division?
The Chargers.
What?
Could happen.
Could.
And they have a brutal schedule, the Broncos. I mean, all the teams in the division
do. They're better
than
every team they face.
All right. Now, listen, I asked you a question. Don't get cross with me. If I'm the one dead, then I'll be dead.
Fair enough.
All right. Now, so, Matt Ryan, make your case here, because I must be missing something. To me, Matt Ryan is, and to make it clear, I am not comparing the debate isn't, do I think Matt Ryan is one of the five worst quarterbacks in the NFL? No, I don't. The standard is he one of the 8 or 10 best quarterbacks in the NFL? To that, I say no. No, he is not. What am I missing here, Wes?
Well, let's start at last year. He was overrated, ranked 17th on the top 100 overall. That was too high for Matt Ryan. Mm-hmm. We were talking about this in the newsroom yesterday. I don't think he's a guy who carries his team like Andrew Luck can at his greatest moments. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, these guys can carry their team. I think he's more in that Phillip Rivers category where he's as good as he can possibly be without making his surrounding talent better. I think when Julio Jones went down, I said on the ATL podcast, people are going to find out that Matt Ryan isn't the offense. Julio Jones is. He's the one who takes the double coverage and allows Tony Gonzalez to work the middle of the field, allows Roddy White to do his thing, opens up the running game. But then after he went down and people started hating on Matt Ryan because his numbers weren't as bad, I was watching the games every week and I'm saying, this guy's the exact same quarterback he's always
right.
been.
And it wasn't just Julio. Remember, Roddy White was carrying that ankle injury whole season.
He turned Harry Douglas into a 1,000-yard receiver, which is pretty good. But when you watch the film, he played the exact same. He's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league, makes as good a decisions as just about anybody. In the last 2 years, here's the list of quarterbacks with a higher completion percentage than Matt Ryan. Peyton Manning.
Well, let me just say, because there are two sides that can go either way for you. Like you say, you're talking about making guys better, or are they making you better? Whereas, to me, Aaron Rodgers, and I agree with you, you just released, in fact, last week on NFL.com, and you can look it up. I completely agree with your assessment. Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL, but of course you've heard me say that a million times already. And the thing that is hard to, this is something that people who talk about sports for a living like to say, is he makes guys around him better. But who does that better? I mean, that was always the greatest thing about Michael Jordan, is look at how he elevated the guys around him. Tom Brady does it legitimately, but Aaron Rodgers, I mean, what about all the guys, all the so-so wide receivers? I mean, is Greg Jennings now?
There you go, underrating Jordy Nelson.
Well, listen, I'm not underrating him, but would Jordy Nelson be a star?
I think he would, yeah.
He'd be a star anywhere.
I think Rodgers helps him, but I think Rodgers would be a star anywhere.
How about this? What if you put Julio Jones on the Packers and put Jordy Nelson on the Falcons?
I think Julio Jones is the better player.
Yeah. But would Jordy Nelson set the world on fire statistically, the way he has in Green Bay?
Yes. Yeah, I think he would still do great. The one thing with Jordy is that his skills mesh with Aaron Rodgers so well, especially the back shoulder throw, which Rodgers seems to have made into an art or a science or whatever he's doing with the back shoulder throw. And Rodgers is the best boundary receiver in the NFL. Sideline catches, back of the end zone catches, nobody does it better than him.
Matt Ryan has been in the NFL for 6 seasons, and he has won one playoff game, which is not Romo-esque. It is what Romo has done in his career.
Right, but then you started comparing what Matt Ryan had done in the playoffs to Andy Dalton in the playoffs. Matt Ryan in the playoffs has a touchdown interception ratio of 9-7. Andy Dalton has one touchdown and 6 picks.
All right, but listen.
In 3 playoff games,
I don't think Andy Dalton is subpar.
Aaron Rodgers has done in all the playoff games he's played.
I, first of all, advocate removing Andy Dalton. I think they should have done that in this offseason.
But
I don't think they should have rolled.
You never came up with a better solution, nor did they.
I think
there wasn't one out there for them.
I definitely disagree with you about that. They could have drafted Derek Carr. That would have been a better solution with the weapons that they have.
With the window that they have, with the weapons they have and the defense they have, I'm not sure I agree with you. I don't think you want to start with a rookie.
I'll repeat what I keep saying. You watch. AJ, here's what's going to happen. This thing's coming to a head in Cincinnati this year. They can accept Andy Dalton. This is what happens with a fan base, with a local media gang, and so on. A team starts getting better and better, and it's exciting. Oh, we made the playoffs. Now we have to win a playoff game. Now you become not all that excited about that. Now it's time for the Bengals fans, the media, and everybody else is going to start coming down on Andy Dalton if he doesn't deliver. You watch. A.J. McCarron's going to start a game, at least one, that and will not be caused by injury. But anyway, Matt Ryan is a guy who has benefited. just as we say guys make other, you know, some quarterbacks make his receivers better. How, I mean, who has benefited more from Julio Jones, Roddy White, and Tony Gonzalez? I mean, I only say it half-kiddingly. I would throw 15 or 20 touchdown passes a year with those guys as catching my passes.
NFL quarterbacks are judged.
I might get intercepted, though, like double digits is the only
double
thing.
Double digits, you
yeah,
think?
I might get to like 10,
I
12.
I think triple digits is
INTs.
More likely.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
NFL quarterbacks are judged by people in the game on what they do on third downs, close and late in games, and in the playoffs. Matt Ryan was in the top three quarterbacks on third downs last year, even without his wide receivers and a bad offensive line. Entering last season, he had more fourth quarter overtime comebacks than any quarterback in the league since he entered the league. And in the playoffs, I can give him a pass for his first couple years in the league. He wasn't experienced.
Mm-hmm.
2012, against the Seahawks and 49ers, two of the best defenses in the NFL, averaged 325 yards a game, three touchdowns a game, 70% completions, over 100 passer rating. And really, those numbers go up even higher against the 49ers. Almost 400 yards, 9.5 yards per attempt, and a 115 passer rating. And they lose the game, and he gets blamed for that.
Final couple of thoughts, and then we'll move on to a little bit of fantasy talk here. Here's the thing to me with Matt Ryan. Again, just one career playoff victory at this point. One.
It's way early.
As you touch on, and this isn't something that is unique to him, many quarterbacks suffer from this. I mean, it's hard to rank him too highly when he can't do if oh, the offensive line isn't good. Oh, well, then he's not going to do anything this year.
Well, he still finished second in the NFL in completion percentage last year.
All right, so I guess he did do something.
I mean, he still had pretty good numbers.
All right, listen, I think you largely win this argument. And when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong, like Jerry Orbach does at the end of Dirty Dancing. I am wrong, apparently, about Matt Ryan, and I will accept your words. I do, though, think it's not a great kryptonite to have. That, well, all the heat's off me if the offensive line is crummy. I can just point to that and say that needs to be fixed before I can do anything
Which
else.
Which is why I would not rank him over Andrew Luck and Big Ben.
And the other thing is, I do think 2014 is a humongous year for Matt Ryan. I think, and in fact, for all the Falcons, for the organization as it stands. If they don't, I mean, how far do you expect them to go, is the question, because both sides of the line have been addressed. Julio Jones is back. They lose Tony Gonzalez, of course. Steven Jackson's a little long in the tooth, but they now have some nice options carrying the ball otherwise there. This is a team that is going to obviously be better than 2-14. Do you think they can be better than 8-8 in that division? We agree the Saints are going to be good.
Yeah.
The Buccaneers' defense is going to be good. The Panthers' defense should be good. I don't know what's going to be overall with either the Bucs or the Panthers, but they're both interesting at least to wait and see what happens with them. I don't see them doing much better than 8-8, and if they don't, I think their head coach is out. I think the GM's out. I think there's going to be a lot. It'll be a massive shakeup.
I think that's a tough division. I think the Falcons come in second. It wouldn't surprise me if they go 11-5 or 10-6. I think their defense is way better than people think. They really bulked up the defensive line. They're moving to more of a 3-4 look. They got a genuine nose tackle in Solei, picked up run-stuffing defensive end in Tyson Jackson, and another one in draft in Rashidi Hegeman. I think they're going to be a lot bigger and more physical than everybody's used to, and I think that will go a long way. It would not surprise me. And whether they go 11-5 or 7-9, I think Dimitroff is safe as GM. Mike Smith might be another.
All right, Wes. Great stuff. I think, like I say, I give you – well, you know what? I'm going to let Black Tide make the decision here. Who wins this? I you know why? I'm in a generous mood. I know the Atlanta native over there is going to say that that Wes won also because he likes – he's just spiteful towards me. Black Tie is. Go ahead.
I'm going to let A.J. Hawk take it away.
Damashek's a genius.
Oh,
except
thank
you're
not.
That's, I mean, Hank and I told you last week there's no way that, you know, you
all right,
clearly
I put it on
have
there.
Something against Matt Ryan.
Why would you feed what those weirdos on Twitter accuse me of? They sound like they're 11 years old. Why do you hate you? All you say is hateful stuff about my team. You never say anything nice about it. I will repeat for the millionth time. I have no axe to grind. with any team in the NFL. I don't hate any team in the NFL. I've met too many players from all the teams, even the Baltimore Ravens. It's not my preference to see the Ravens win, but I don't care ultimately. I only like one football team. You understand? You got that, Black Tie? Stop perpetuating the jive that I have something against Matt Ryan.
Interaction, hashtag DGFP.
All right. Well, there's some good questions flowing in. Any questions you want us to answer here on the show, hashtag at DDFP, and we'll see if we can answer them, just like we did this one, because everybody came after me because I said Matt Ryan wasn't good enough, and they called for their hero, Chris Wessling, to defend Matty Ice's honor, and now so he has, and we bid him good day and good riddance for showing me up on my own show. I don't like that, Wes. See, it was a good effort.
Well, I hope you'll have me back again in spite of that.
No, now you're on a six-month probation until the Falcons go 7-9. If the Falcons go 7-9, I want you back in here around New Year's to admit you were wrong and I was right.
That's fair, and I will do my best Jerry Orbach act.
All right, very good. Beat it. Around the League podcast, and again, his top 10 greatest snubs on this year's list. We didn't even talk about those. The one you left off was Keenan Allen. Could have been Rookie of the Year. The Chargers wouldn't have gone to the playoffs without Keenan Allen. Rather have T.Y. Hilton, says Chris Wessling. But Keenan Allen was a major snub on the top 100 list. Who? Julius Thomas, our pal from Soccer Talk a few weeks ago. Also, doesn't even make the top 100 list after the season he put together.
Charles Clay made it.
I know. It's cuckoo. That list, man, comes up with some cuckoo conclusions. Anyway, all right, let's kibitz now about fantasy football. I know it's just July now. And, in fact, I was thinking in the car ride down here today, I'm going to be doing my fantasy draft. My big league probably is now still about 2 months away, but I'll be doing drafts about 4 weeks from now. It's time to get going. The man who just walked into Studio 4, though, is the hardest working man in fantasy. He goes 365 on the subject of fantasy football. You absolutely need to be following him for all your fantasy news. And he is up there publishing a bunch of stuff to get you ready for your draft at NFL.com. I'm speaking, of course, of the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano. What's the poop, fella?
What's going on, my friend? I hate to disappoint you because I don't have an accent like Wessling and Handsome Hank do.
No.
I'm just
You've already disappointed me by being a front runner for all teams.
Here we
go.
Can I tell you?
Are you a Germany fan now in soccer?
Cowboys fan has not been all that pleasant in the last 17 years.
No, and I know. And I've seen you.
That's half of my fandom right
there,
pal.
And I see you bemoaning your Yankees on Twitter.
They can't hit. Well, they hit against Minnesota and they hit against Cleveland last night, but boy, I don't know. They need to make some trades.
Did you happen to see what Jeter did against the Tribe on Monday night? Duping. He pretended the guy was coming into second base, and he faked him out into thinking that the ball was on the way.
Yep.
That was very clever. He's
been around the league for a while. So.
He may not be all that gifted athletically anymore, but he's still a cagey guy.
He's still doing all right.
Yeah, that was good. So, all right, let's kibitz now about fantasy. And where do you want to go? What do you want to talk about here? I saw that you have up on NFL.com your 20 essential tips to know in front of doing a draft. Share a few of those with
me. It's not so much tips as it is statistical facts that you should keep in mind. For example, Peyton Manning, 5,400 yards passing last year, almost 55 touchdown passes. And people automatically look back at what a guy did last year and think they're going to get it again in 2014, the next season. But if you look historically at quarterbacks who've thrown for 5,000 yards, no one's ever done it in back-to-back years except for Dave Dameshek.
Aaron Rodgers?
No. Drew Brees.
I should have known that. I knew it wasn't
Rodgers.
Drew
Brees and quarterbacks who throw for 40 touchdown passes in one season, the following season, typically see a pretty drastic drop in touchdown passes. It's a 13.8 touchdown pass decrease on average, and that doesn't count Tom Brady in 2008 because he missed most of that season with the ACL. Drew Brees is the only quarterback in the history of the league to go 40-40.
That's some stat. So you're saying that if you're being smart and you're the first guy to take a QB in your draft, don't make it Peyton Manning.
I would say that you should not reach for Peyton Manning as one of the first 10 picks. You know me, I'm not going to draft a quarterback anywhere near there.
Right.
Because you're not guaranteed to get the same production. He's going to be good. He's Peyton Manning. He's going to be great. He's going to throw for 4,000, 4,500 and give you somewhere around 40 touchdowns. But keep in mind, That's a pretty big decline based on what he did last year. It's almost like Adrian Peterson 2 years ago when he rushed for almost 2,100 yards and was the top scoring running back in fantasy. Well, last year, he only finished eighth. It's good. It's a top 10 finish, but if you were expecting the 2012 numbers, you were disappointed.
I want to talk about running backs in a second, but regarding the Broncos, mm-hmm. my pal the Dutch Mook won my big league last year, employing a fascinating strategy that when he did it, I was intrigued and I wanted to see how it would play out before I advocated for it. He cornered the market on the Denver Broncos. He went all in. He got and by the way, you can really I guess you could do this in a snake draft, in just a regular old snake draft, but my league is an auction league, so it makes it easier to do it. But either way, I think you could kind of line it up and do it in a regular 10 or 12 team league. He got Peyton Manning, Demaryius Thomas, Julius Thomas, Knowshon Moreno.
Pretty good.
And Wes Welker. So he didn't have Eric Decker, and so there were some things missing out.
He did luck out in that he drafted players from the offense of the greatest statistical offense in the history of the league.
I think you need to. I think that is right.
But
I think if you said, I think part of the wrinkle is, I think what you touch on the key to it. Right now, if you said, I'm going to do that with the Broncos again this year, you will struggle because you'll get a fight. When that, you know, fantasy football, just like when we talk about the top 100, how do you figure Russell Wilson is so high on the list this year? Because he won the Super Bowl. So
right.
When you win with the victor go the spoils, people have a perception around in fantasy terms, well, that Broncos offense in 2013 is the all-time offense, ergo, I just need to load up on those pieces. As you just pointed out there, statistically, that's not a guarantee. What you need to do is suss out who is a little bit of a diamond in the rough offense. What offense is going to explode and corner the market on it? I'll tell you a good one. The Washington Redskins.
They have
got a ton
of offensive weapons.
You could do this realistically with your draft. You could take in the first round. I guess you could take Alfred Morris if you're at the back end there.
I wouldn't. He's a second or third rounder.
Okay, so you could take you could take a legit running back. You could get whoever it is, Shady McCoy, Jamal Charles, Matt Forte is going to have a big year. But then starting in the second round, you could go Alfred Morris. Then you could come back with DeSean Jackson. Then you could go Pierre Garçon, and then go RG3,
and then Jordan Reed. First, yeah,
would you?
I like Garçon better than Jackson.
That's probably true. But either way, you could realistically do that in a 12-team league. Those guys are slotted the way I just laid them out, pretty much where you would get them, and you could win your fantasy league. The downside to this strategy is when they get shut out or they only score 10 points
you're
in a
dead.
Given week, that is going to be a loss. You just can't have that happen in the playoffs. But if they're going to do it 3 out of 4 weeks, if they're going to put up a big offensive number, your fantasy team is definitely going to the playoffs.
And you know what advantage they have, just like the rest of the NFC East? They play my beloved, awful, defensive-less Cowboys twice in every season.
I'll tell you what, the more I think about this strategy, I think this is gold, Dave.
Think about it. Their defense is going to be awful,
right?
Historically bad,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to score a lot of points. You're going to see the Cowboys playing in like 38 to 30 games, probably on the losing end of that, but they are going to give up a lot of points. They're going to score a lot of fantasy points. So, Tony Romo, heck, I'd take him as my QB1 if I was really wanting to wait on a quarterback until after the 10th round. You could probably get Romo somewhere around round 10 because of this.
To your
so
point,
deep.
Right.
DeMarco,
that's all.
Murray,
this is why Fabiano, if you're a newcomer to fantasy or haven't really thought through your strategy, Fabiano and I have parked our cars in the same garage mm-hmm. on this for a long time. QBs, everybody's throwing the ball. Therefore, you're going to be able to get a decent option
right.
at 10 or 12. However, running backs, why is gold valuable? Because it's
never
rare.
Depreciates.
You don't. No, well, that's it. But that's not the metaphor I was going for. The metaphor I was going for here was that it's rare, so it makes it precious. You see, that's what bona fide mm-hmm. running backs who put up big numbers are in the NFL. Now there are only 12 guys or 14 guys who really you can lean on and expect to get nice numbers from a fantasy perspective from. And so let the running back, I mean, let the QB go to round 6, round 8, round 10 even. Make sure you load up on those running backs. That's your cardinal rule, right?
I was in a draft, yes. I was in a draft with industry types 2 or 3 weeks ago, and employed my strategy, waited on a quarterback. I got Cam Newton in the 10th round. I don't care that his wide receivers are questionable and that he's coming off of an ankle procedure. I got Cam Newton in the 10th round, Dave. Mm-hmm. He's finished no worse than 4th in fantasy points at quarterback in the last 3 years, in his 3 years at the pro level. And I got Phillip Rivers 2 rounds later. Phillip Rivers was 6th in fantasy points at quarterback. You can wait. If it's Romo, if it's Matt Ryan, who I think is going to have a very good season as long as his weapons hold up, mm-hmm. Roddy White and Julio Jones. But there are so many quarterbacks. Heck, I like Johnny Manziel. I don't know if there's a rule around here that every show has to include
there's
at least
roll
one
around here.
Johnny Manziel.
Get it, roll, because
roll,
he was rolling.
Rolling. The, yeah, I got I you. Do we have like an applause thing? Or
nah, okay. It's not worth it. Didn't.
There you go. But I'm and people may think I'm nuts here, but I think Manziel at some point next season.
Damashek, sorry, I AJ Hogg chiming in there.
Damashek's laugh just makes me laugh. But I would argue that Manziel could become a low QB1 at some point this season, and people will be starting him week in and week out.
Because they'll run.
Exactly.
They have dreadful outside of Jordan Cameron. They have nobody to catch
the ball. Do you know how many fantasy points Johnny Manziel averaged at Texas A&M? Just
don't you dare throw out his A&M numbers to me as a fantasy.
Just on his rushing totals. He averaged almost 16 fantasy points a game just as a rusher. Okay? So if you
that's going deep, Black Tie. You see, he's using SEC numbers.
If you take half of that, and he averages 8 fantasy points a game just as a runner, which is right around the same number of fantasy points that Tim Tebow averaged when he was just running the football in his starts with the Denver Broncos. You can't see a scenario where Johnny Manziel gives you 9 to 10 points per game as a passer, too? I mean,
it's fascinating.
He's locked and loaded to be a fantasy
player. So, real quick then. So, we know, obviously, the first, if you're doing it the right way, at least, and the people in your league are doing it the right way, Adrian Peterson, some combination of these names will come out, but it'll go Adrian Peterson, Jamal Charles, Shady McCoy.
Matt Forte.
Matt Forte, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about Matt Forte in just a second here. I think I might go Jamal Charles. If I have the first overall pick, I might go Jamal Charles. He will continue to be the featured weapon in his offense. You don't know exactly how it's going to go down in Philly now, how Darren Sproles might cut into it. I mean, Shady's still the man. I would think long and hard about Shady, but I would not take Peterson.
Oh,
Number one overall.
Oh, I love Peterson.
All right. Well, it's not crazy, but yeah.
Love him. Jamal Charles has lost 3 offensive linemen. Remember that. I'm not saying that I wouldn't.
True enough. Right.
And no running back since 2006, 2007 has gone number one back to back at running based on fantasy points. So that was LT. So Charles is not going to finish number one. He's probably going to finish in the top 8. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I'm going Peterson because of the North Turner factor, because they want to get him open in space. They want to give him the football as a pass catcher. I don't care about 29 years old. He's not human. He came back from a reconstructed knee and blew up the whole league with almost 2,100 rushing yards. This is going to be Adrian Peterson's last elite statistical season. And then he's going to be good for a year or two, and then he'll fall off.
And then Jerry Jones will trade for him.
Exactly.
In 2018.
Exactly, and probably give him like $10 million a year.
So yeah, well that steers us towards a conversation about one of your other favorite teams, the LA Lakers, overspending to get this.
Hey!
I don't want to talk about that right now, guys.
What are the Lakers have like 2 guys under contract right
now? Just tell me
like
this.
Kobe and Nash and that's it.
Last question of this show here is the 3 great rookie runners last year. You know, you can roll the dice on Ryan Matthews and DeMarco Murray and all those guys. But to me at running back in real terms and in fantasy, if I were a GM, give me the young guys, because at that position, you just take a beating, and it's unfortunate, but it's a reality. To me, the guys I would love to have are the 2 of the 3 sophomore stars, Gio Bernard.
Love him.
Eddie Lacy.
Right.
And 26 for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So
how
do you lay those
out? Le'Veon Bell. Well, Lacy's going to be one of the 6 or 7 first picks in every draft. I have him ranked 6th at running back right now. I love Gio Bernard. I love him.
You think he blows it up this year?
I think he could. I mean, you know about these versatile running backs throughout the course of the National Football League.
Because I have a sneaking suspicion
Roger
he does.
Roger Craig kind of thing, yeah. Like a Charlie Garner kind of thing. I'm not talking about build. I'm talking about production.
Right.
He can catch the ball to the backfield. He can run it. I'm not saying he's going to be a 1,000-yard back. 1,500 scrimmage yards and 8 to 10 touchdowns. I could totally see that. Le'Veon Bell, first-round pick. No doubt about it. I don't like
that. That line's going to be good.
I don't like that. Yes, the line's going to be very good as long as they stay healthy. I don't like that he averaged under 4 yards a carry as a rookie, but it doesn't bother me
enough.
He
was banged
up,
and that line was abysmal.
Right.
It's different now.
He's going to be a first-round pick. He can catch the ball
in the
backfield.
Will all three of those guys be first-round picks?
I think Bernard may be late first round of a 12-team league, but those guys are gone after the first 15 picks in every draft, as far as I'm concerned.
I feel like if you have this option in your draft this year, because one of my leagues, we do a thing where whoever came in last year gets to pick where they draft, mm-hmm. and then the champion gets the last pick, of course. If you have that as a wrinkle in your league, I almost would take picks 12 and 13 for exactly what you're saying, because I think you might get Le'Veon Bell and Gio Bernard, and then you got two young runners, and you're all set to go. I almost would rather do that versus, like, say, Jamaal Charles and, you know, I don't even know what would be left.
If you're talking about running backs, probably looking at Zach Stacy, somewhere like that. If you want to go running back. I never do that. I go running back, wide receiver, and then I fill out my running backs and wide receivers in the next few rounds. But if you're looking at just going running back, so say Charles is going to cost you what? First, second, or third overall pick, right? Mm-hmm. Then you're at the end of the second round. That's probably what you're looking at.
Antonio Brownish.
If you're
– right? Is that about –
at wide receiver, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question, right?
Antonio Brown
is right
gone around
there. Alshon Jeffrey, somebody in that sort of on that sort of tier. But at the running back position, Doug Martin will probably be gone at that point, I would think. Maybe you can get a Reggie Bush.
You see what I'm saying?
Or an Andre Ellington.
Better to be
like
at the back end of the first round and get those two guys.
Sure.
Anyway, you see, he doesn't even need notes. He just does it all off the top of his head. He can summit what he can summon what guy is going to be there in the third round at the back end based on
lot of really valuable information to, like, football and fantasy stats. Sometimes I don't even know what the hell my mother's name is.
And you've also you long ago lost your honor when you started as a New Yorker rooting for the LA Lakers.
I'm from Connecticut.
And for Carolina Hoops. Jeez. Where's your dignity, man?
Listen,
all right.
I told you, whole geographic limitations on being a fan, that don't hold any water.
I know,
Fabiano.
But what's exciting is that we're just like a week or less away from who just scored there, Black Tie? Germany.
3-0 to Germany.
What?
24 minutes in.
They have three
Germany's
goals?
Germany's putting it on.
Oh, my God. Fabiano has a Brazil's new favorite soccer team.
No, I don't.
He loves Germany now.
I don't pay any attention to soccer. I don't know what's going on. I know
you love Germany now,
around,
though.
They run around for 90 minutes and score one goal.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
why fantasy soccer is not popular, because they don't have any categories. What the heck do you do?
That is a great idea. Fantasy soccer would be the worst ever.
I know. You'd win like 2-1.
Yeah, your total
boring.
Week. Your week total, you'd have to do it over a month.
I know, exactly.
I beat you 4-3 over the course of a month.
Although some of these soccer teams were scoring more points than the Yankees were scoring runs earlier in the month. But
all right, great stuff, Fabiano. We'll continue doing this as the fantasy drafts get closer and closer here. Like I say, we'll probably be getting those going, or you will probably be getting those.
Oh, you'll be in a mock draft very soon, my friend. I promise you.
I'm down for that noise. Yeah. I like seeing how it plays out. So,
yeah
we'll definitely do that over the next 4 or 5 weeks here. And so thanks to Fabiano for
Always
jumping
a
in.
Always a pleasure.
Black Tie's
Wait,
going
they scored
crazy.
Again?
What is it? Is this?
Four to Germany.
Wait a minute.
Is this the
Goodness.
Craziest?
This is the craziest.
Wait, that what? Kid's crying. Wow.
Yeah, I'd cry too.
Four goals.
Wait a second, Black Tie. Is this history?
This is history.
What's the biggest blowout in semifinal history? I'm sure some completely overmatched team snuck in.
35. How many minutes is it? 25 minutes in?
25 minutes in. Brazil hasn't lost at home in about 40 years.
Yeah, they're about to.
You think?
Wow.
This is loco. And it's 25 minutes in. This could get – I mean, it's our – if I told you before the game, I said, oh, yeah, Germany's going to win 3-0, you would say, what a humiliation. It's 4-0.
And you know what, too? everyone in Brazil took the day off of work. The streets are probably empty. They're all at the game or watching the game.
Maybe the fates are weighing in here because Brazil.
This is a good time to call it a show, guys. This
black tie. Black tie doesn't know what he's getting.
Yeah, he wants to go watch the game.
If this podcast doesn't reach your ears for another 2 weeks, it's because Black Tie's head is spinning so fast right now.
The St. Matthew Dano family does have some Brazilian blood, so this is rough right now.
Sorry, Black Tie. Sorry for the people of Brazil. My goodness, unbelievable. All right, well, listen, we'll get over it because we focus on our brand of football, so we'll have another podcast later in the week. But in the meantime, thanks to Wessling, thanks to Handsome Hank, Black Tie, and Fabiano. We'll talk to you later on. Thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.